Hi everyone, thank you for taking the time out of your day to listen and to learn more about how to become a great leader, and specifically a servant leader, one who is aware of serving those you lead. Celia Brewer is the Carlsbad, California City Attorney, and we are fortunate today to have her as our guest on our program. Welcome, Celia.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here. You and I first met when you came to talk with our students at the Carlsbad Student Leadership Academy, and it was great to see you in action with the students and inspire them about public service.
Well, I hope I had some impact on the students as well.
Well, I think so, because often they don't realize they can get involved in local government in any way, that people care about what they think, and just also to show you can have a great career.
And I hope what I conveyed is that whether they make the decision to or not, they are the leaders of the future. Their entire high school class will go on to lead this country, and they can either accept that and take on the challenge of creating a future they would like, or they can just default their way into it. So I'm hoping that they really take action to try to build the world that they want in the future.
Yeah, and I think that I think you accomplished delivering that message. So thanks for that. Well, to get us started here, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became Carlsbad City Attorney?
Certainly. I went to law school 25 years ago, and I had grown up in this area and watched the area grow. I actually, believe it or not, once upon a time opposed most of the developments in the area, and it gave me a keen interest in who does get to make the rules and regulations about our land and about our cities and how we grow. So that inspired me to focus on that when I went to law school. So I've been a public law attorney for 25 years now. I have served cities and local agencies such as school districts and even some public charter schools and water districts. And when the opportunity came open in the city of Carlsbad, I applied immediately, along with probably several hundred other city attorneys. It's a great city, it has a good reputation. And I went through a competitive process interviewing with the city council. There's two employees who are hired directly by the city council, the city attorney and the city manager. And fortunately, they chose me, and I was elated.
I bet. Wow, that's exciting. Well, you know, for those that don't know where Carlsbad is on the map, the Servant Leadership Institute is headquartered here. We're in Carlsbad, which is about 35 minutes north of downtown San Diego. It's a coastal community, a great place to live, I have to say. Very fortunate to live here. So what an accomplishment to be the Carlsbad City Attorney. Tell us a bit about your role. Tell us what you do. What's a, you know, day in the life, if you will.
So the role of a public law attorney is very similar to the role of being general counsel at a private corporation. I'm responsible, or my department is responsible, for transactional documents such as sales documents, sales transactions, real property, any other large acquisitions we make. We also handle litigation and defense of the city. So if someone has a dispute with the city, we're in charge of somehow resolving that dispute, whether we do it through mediation or through the court system. And then my particular role is to keep the city council and the items before the public in compliance with all of the laws that guarantee public transparency and participation in local government.
So tell us about the group you lead.
So I have in my office, I run the city attorney's office. We're separate from the rest of the city, and we have four attorneys in the city representing all of our departments. So I have them basically assigned to departments. I have an attorney that's assigned to police and fire and personnel, another city attorney who represents public works, and another one for planning and the planning commission, environmental issues, and then another one who does prosecution. So there's actually also a paralegal who is invaluable, and it's just a great department. I'm really fortunate. You'll probably hear me wax eloquent about my employees throughout this podcast, because they are really what makes the department. I have sensational people.
Well, and quite a complexity that you went across running this team, right? So mm-hmm. What is your leadership style, and how do you approach all the complexities of your department?
I am a very, I would say, collaborative person. I perceive us as a team. I don't perceive myself as an authoritarian. I work with professionals, and I think of all of our goals as team goals. When it comes to leading my people are so smart, I practically have to run to catch up. So I really believe in investing in their futures. My goal would be to produce the finest city attorneys that could ever go out and represent not only my city, but if they leave our city and go out somewhere else, I hope they adhere to the highest professional standards and ethical standards. So that is my goal. So I definitely lead by trying to provide opportunity. I am not a micromanager. I want everyone to be able to spread their wings. I want people to be able to make mistakes. I think mistakes are marvelous. They teach us lessons that we couldn't learn any other way. They teach us to overcome our fears, for one thing, and our insecurities. So I am not a fan of the leadership style that says, let me find what you're doing wrong and focus on that mm-hmm. and tell you to fix it. I really believe that most of us like to do what we're good at, and we gravitate towards that, and we tend to resist what we're not so good at. And if we follow people's natural proclivities, I think we can build teams that are made of everyone's strengths instead of weaknesses. And there's no perfect person, in my view. You know, I tend to be a big picture person running the strategies, and so I really need to surround myself with detailed people. But all good teams have some of everybody, right? Mm-hmm. We need representation from all kinds of thinkers and all kinds of communicators and all kinds of people. So that's, I really believe the strength in a team comes from its diversity.
That's such an interesting perspective, and one that, you know, many leaders don't have. How did this happen? How did you gain this perspective on leading to one's strength, for one thing, and not like you have to get better at what you're bad at?
Well, I suppose from being subject to those kinds of review processes myself, mm-hmm. performance evaluation processes myself, and just knowing how students work. I have three children, and they've taught me as much about leadership as anything else has. So I watch them in school, and I watch what schools do, and I just have never really thought that the penalizing what people are bad at works as well as rewarding what people are good at. And I see it in my kids when they have a class that they're really struggling with. That tends to be the class they want to give the least amount of attention, for logical reasons. Who wants to do what's not paying off? Nobody. And so I think if we kind of reversed our dynamic and started investing in what people are good at, I think we would see better performance generally and probably higher self-esteem.
Absolutely. It makes so much sense that just listening to this, like, well, of course, but we weren't raised with that, many of us anyway. Well, when you talk about your own children, and we started the program mentioning the Carlsbad Student Leadership Academy. Just going to tell our audience a little bit about that, because it is happening in our community, but I think it's relevant anywhere in the world to do the type of teaching we're giving these students, which is the first portion is learn who you are. What makes you tick? What are the things you're good at or would like to really focus on? And just helping them spend that time reflecting versus this is what my parents said or this is my teacher said. And then we teach them some basic servant leadership skills. Use those gifts you're discovering here, and you can go out and do something good in the world, and specifically in your own community. So we have youth school, lead school, and then in serve school, we ask them, what are you concerned about in the community? And we get their issues and then have them work on projects to develop what they'd like to do about that issue. And it's all over the map of what they're concerned about. And so when you were here and you had a chance to talk with these students, which you probably on a day-to-day basis aren't in front of a group of high school students, but tell me what that experience was like and then what you really wanted to leave them with and in the message that you had.
Well, I did take it as a challenge because when I first started speaking, I saw kids on their phones and maybe not as engaged. Yeah. And so it was a challenge for me to be able to present information about local government that they would find intriguing, and they did. Their ears perked up, they put down their phones, they started asking questions, and they became engaged. And that's very exciting to me because I am a big advocate of and cheerleader for local government. I think people forget about local government when it's functioning well. You tend not to question it, mm-hmm. as long as you turn on your taps and they work and you don't have to wait too long at a stop sign. But local government is where we really touch people the most. It's where most of us are exposed to government at all. And there are so many opportunities for young people in local government. You don't have to be the city attorney, but there are daily challenges that are future-oriented in local government. We are the ones who deal with stormwater pollution. We are the ones who deal with traffic solutions, with smart city solutions. We're the ones looking forward at cybersecurity issues. And those are all issues that we need the leadership of young people. You know, frankly, I'm a little bit of a dinosaur in some ways. I wasn't raised with these technologies. So for me, just to get my head around the problem is pretty challenging in and of itself. But to come up with solutions, I really am looking forward to having more young people enter local government to do that.
And I think that's one of the things you were able to inspire them about is we want to hear what you have to say, you know, and we need to let them know that. So they do feel like they can open up and there's a place and a way that they can voice their concerns.
Well, and local government really shapes cities, right? So if you get 50 people coming into a council meeting wearing red t-shirts, that's a real block of people, and the council is going to take note and they're going to be concerned. And if you can come in and present a solution for an issue, whether it's more open space or access for dogs at a park or a way to put in a pollution-free storm drain, something like that, you're going to find people will listen and respond. And what a great way to make the community better instantly.
No kidding. The other thing that's really great, just the timing of this, is that with all that's going on in our government, you know, we're getting a lot of negative news. Doesn't matter what side of the fence you're on. It's just a negative kind of experience overall that's coming at us. There's some, of course, great things, but we're getting a lot of negativity. And I think that what we can do for young minds is keep the positive aspects out of there, what you can do. So you don't just, you know, one of their concerns was depression. And we were reflecting, the mayor was here that night, like, wow, that wasn't a word we would have used as our top issues in the community. And that just shows us that there's some really tough stuff out there. So
I think that we are, at some levels, really in dire need of leadership. And when I say leadership, I mean people with a vision that can carry us forward, something that's inclusive of our concerns and addresses what it's like to live in this increasingly complex and scary world. The rate of change itself is hard to deal with for people. The fractionalization of our communities, some of us don't have family close, some of us have moved several times, so we're not as connected in our neighborhoods. I think that's a real challenge to build that sense of community. And then to have someone present to us an opportunity to move into the future in a way that we want to work hard for. So right now, I think people are grappling for that vision and really scrambling for it, especially young people.
I think so, too. And so it was great to see how engaged they became as they were more comfortable asking you questions. And, you know, it was just wonderful. So thank you again for that. I really appreciate it. Excuse me. The other thing that we wanted to talk to you about, Celia, was just this definition of what servant leadership is. We always love to hear people express, how would you describe this? Because we get asked it all the time.
Well, I don't know what your organization's actual definition is, but I'll tell you what it means to me. To me, it means someone who is serving for others and not for self. People who are in leadership positions to gain power or to get notoriety, that's the antithesis of servant leadership. I think servant leadership is there to solve problems, to create teams, to make people feel better and stronger.
So what in regards to what makes a great leader, are those some of the key characteristics, would you say?
Boy, that's a tough one because I know there's hundreds of books written on leadership. For me, I think a leader would be someone who can speak with some vision and some passion about a way to go into the future. And I think that message needs to be inclusive to inspire me to want to follow somebody. And I think it's really important to have those things. I also think leadership requires humility and honesty. If people don't speak with authenticity. I'd much rather hear someone say I made a mistake than to cover it up with a lie or mm-hmm. pretend like it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. That's just me. But I find that much more appealing and much more persuasive in a leader than someone who tries to cover it up or to blame other people.
So just that behavior is a strength versus a negative aspect when you just are transparent.
Yes, especially in my line of work, I think it's important to always tell the truth about what you know and what you don't know. And I can tell you, as a city attorney who sits up on the dais, sometimes you get asked a question and you don't know the answer. And the hardest thing to do, because you want to give an answer, you want to please everybody, you want to allow the conversation to move on, is to say, I don't know that, and I'm going to have to take that under advisement to give you an answer that you deserve. And it's a tough thing to do. And for some reason, in our instant world, I think people often feel pressure to give an answer when they don't have time to reflect. So it's a skill to be able to say, let me think on that.
And that must have quite an impression on your staff and just all those around you. If you can do that, that allows other people to do that as well, don't you think?
Well, I think we should all try to be the people where we would like other people to be. So all leaders, I think, need to try to embody and embrace the skills that they value in others.
Mm-hmm. Well, those are really great aspects of and attributes that I do agree with you. There's the best practices of leadership across the board. The servant leader takes that one step further, though, and says, I have this special mindset, though, entering the office, that how can I bring value and who can I bring value to and who can I serve first? There's a bugaboo, if you will, in there in that that self-care piece, because women by nature can be very giving and serve first aspect, but you do have to take care of yourself and make sure that all's in good shape internally for yourself before you can really be good to others, don't you think?
I do think it would be difficult to be a leader without having the ability to be self-reflective and take care of yourself. So to that degree, yes. I'm probably not a good example of balance because I did end up being a single mom. That wasn't my plan, but that's what happened. And so I've really split most of my energies between my career and my children. So self-care sometimes wasn't quite as high up on the list as I think maybe it should have been. But here I am in a new season of my life with my youngest having just gotten her driver's license. So
wow.
Maybe I'll get better at that as I move forward. But even despite the fact that I was busy with my career and my home life, that doesn't mean that I haven't had a chance to reflect on. In fact, I've been forced to reflect on sometimes what leadership qualities are in a person and what inspires me. And I certainly am reading the news on a daily basis and wondering what I can do to make the world a better place in this, as you identified, kind of trying time for mm-hmm. everybody. There's a lot of anxiety. I feel anxiety.
Yes.
I read the news. I come home and I turn on the national news and I think, is this my country? Did I get this wrong?
Am I on the right channel here?
Exactly. So it is crazy, crazy times.
Yeah, Celia, if I could take you back a little bit to one of the comments you made about being a single mom and the balance mm-hmm. of your career and your children, your family. Could you tell us a little bit more about that? If now that you've lived that, what advice would you give younger moms who are dealing with that, up and coming? It's not easy, everybody knows that, but are there any kind of key takeaways from that you could share?
I used to spend a lot of time talking about work-life balance. That's a big issue for women lawyers, and I've been on campaigns and panels and other things talking about work-life balance, and I don't know why they always ask me to speak, because I think it's more like spinning plates and when one comes down they all come down. So it's on the day that you have an important presentation, it's usually the same day that the car breaks down and the kid gets sick. So I think what's important is that people just kind of set aside this notion of perfection. I think we put so much pressure on ourselves. The best you can do every day is the best you can do. And then you just have to take the lessons, forgive yourself for your mistakes, and move on. This idea that we're all going to be, you know, supermodel looking and whip smart at every moment, I just think we have to have to let it go a little bit and just be humans and be content with being humans who are working really hard to do the best they can.
Exactly. Yeah, that's great advice. But there is that feeling in the air, that perfection, and it's going to drive you crazy, right?
Well, and I worry especially about young people, that they have this idea that everyone, grown-ups and adults and people in positions of power and corporate responsibility are somehow waltzing through their lives kind of impenetrable and perfect. And I guarantee you, if you scratch any of those people, they are riddled with the same insecurities as a 17-year-old sitting at the table. They may cover them up better, but all leaders have those insecurities. All people have those insecurities. It's hard to be a human, and everyone is trying their best. And almost all of us have things that we try to compensate for, sometimes things we try to hide, but we're all just people. And I think young people shouldn't be intimidated by that, and they shouldn't be fooled that somehow they've adults have grown into some sort of superhumanhood.
They have it all together.
They haven't. Yeah. They're just like young people. They just know more.
They might, and as you said, might be more clever at disguising it as well. So that can be tricky that way. Yeah.
I really just to go off on a tangent for a minute, but I'm always concerned that. And my children are 15 years apart, right? So my youngest is 15 years younger than my oldest child. And the change that I've seen in the high school curriculums and just in the way they teach high school, I feel like there's less time for kids to enjoy themselves and be themselves and explore, and more time to take the test and the next test and the next test and get into college and get into debt. And we're kind of offering this really anxiety-inducing path. And there's other paths. I personally didn't start college till I was 22. I had some real challenges during my teen years. My family broke apart. So I put myself through college. I didn't start until I was 22. I was working at a hot air balloon company before that. And I think there were a lot of advantages to taking an alternative route. I was able to come into a college classroom with an incredible degree of focus from my work skills that I'd learned. I excelled and was at the top of all of my classes. So that wasn't a disadvantage, but it wasn't the preferred route. So not doing everything the way it's prescribed, it's not by definition bad. It's just different.
It's just different.
Yeah, it takes confidence, and it takes maybe some extra energy to try to carve your own path, but I think that there's rewards from that as well.
Yeah, that's great advice to people, to not get stuck on doing it one way.
Yeah, we do a lot of trying to put everybody into the round square pegs into round holes, and there's round pegs too, but not everyone's a round peg.
Yes, absolutely. I had somebody, just to take you back to our conversation a little bit about women in leadership. We recently gave a presentation at Cal State San Marcos about servant leadership, and one of the students came up to me afterwards and she said, you know, hearing and learning about servant leadership, it is who I am inside, but I couldn't practice that. I can't do that because in everyone's eyes, it appears that's a weakness if I'm the first one to jump up and, for example, get the coffee for everybody. I'm perceived as weak and just, you know, yeah, you do that kind of work and, you know, we'll do the important work. And so she was very conflicted if this is doable for women. And it really struck me listening to this question. She feels like, but if we jump up and serve first and do things that may just be natural, hey, somebody needs help, let me help you. She was about in her 30s, and she said she was really struggling with this.
So she's concerned that she's maybe going to play into a stereotype.
Exactly.
And then get typecast and treated from that point on as something less. I haven't had that concern. I always get the water. I always get the coffee. I am a natural hostess, and I don't ever want to stop being that. But I also, I'm not afraid to state my opinion, and I always try to do it kindly, and I try to seek understanding. I ask a lot of questions. If you've ever been in a meeting with me, I ask a lot of questions to try to understand and provide helpful advice. So I do have confidence in my ability to problem solve and to help people with their problems, so I feel confident asking the questions that'll help get me to a solution. But I will say that the workplace for females is probably not the same as it is for males. I know women lawyers, I think they're at about 16% of the senior management in law firms, and comparable to that in Fortune 500 companies, positions of leadership, and it's even less for women in science. So for whatever reason, for instance in law, even though we've been graduating women at a 50-50 rate, they're not making it up into those upper echelons of leadership positions. And I think that's a couple of reasons. One is I think they're choosing not to because they're not willing to do what's required. And two is, it sounds kind of funny, but those standards of success and the criteria that are used were often set by men. In the legal profession, for instance, there's a lot of ways that men can excel in the partnership ranks using their skills. Lots of hours, lots of billable hours, etc. But the way the profession is structured doesn't reward other skills such as expertise, efficiency. In fact, efficiency is penalized because you need to spend a lot of hours building clients.
Right.
So had another set of people written the criteria for success, maybe it would be more inclusive. So I think we do need to always look at our paradigms and refresh them to make sure that they're inclusive of all people and all talents. Because there's no question that every lawyer I know agrees that the profession is richer for the participation of more women.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a great insight there. And I think also the fact, back to the question about being yourself, and if you are a servant leader, what I heard you say, there's this confidence. So you have a natural ability in the hostess area, and that's natural for you, and that's who you are. But you're so confident in what you do that you don't look at that yourself as a negative, and that's great. I think that's what we really try to explain about servant leadership, that be who you are, but be confident in it. Don't let somebody else define what that is.
Well, and there's ways to build confidence too. I think building confidence in the workforce requires being very good at what you're doing. You have to work really hard. There are very few people who get a great result with minimal effort, right? So I think maximum effort is always going to give a better result. And that means if you have a presentation, you don't wing it and think you're going to be brilliant. You go out and you work really hard and practice your presentation. If you have a report to do, you don't dash it off the night before or start it at 10 p.m. It's not a term paper. You put in the time to make sure you have subject matter expertise. And so I think those things increase confidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's because you're going to have greater success in putting in the time, and that builds confidence.
Well, and then you feel like in a meeting you can state your opinion unequivocally and clearly and kindly. You don't feel like you have anything to prove.
Mm-hmm.
And so it helps. But I do think that there's skills that people need in the workforce in terms of just a plain old work ethic that will really help build that confidence over the arc of a career.
Yeah, that's a good, great point. So when it comes to building a high-performance team, what would you say the top three things are that one should keep in mind in building a high-performance team?
Well, if I only get to pick three, my first one would be investing in their future, investing in my people. So investing in their skill set, and I talked a little bit about that prior. That means sending them to trainings. That means allowing them the freedom to go and try something new without micromanaging them. I think that's really important to building their belief and confidence in their skills. It has to start with me having a belief and confidence in their skills. So that would be number one. What would be number two? Number two would be making them feel like their opinions matter on the team. So allowing them to participate in team decisions and making sure they know that their input is valued and responding to their input. Sometimes I try things that make me a little bit uncomfortable, but I do it on the faith that my team knows more than I do about certain subjects.
Mm-hmm.
And then number three, I think to get a high-performing team, you really have to care about them. And I mean that in a very human way. It means you have to care about them as people, what they're going through. You have to have compassion and caring for their situations and be able to respond to that. If someone has a sick relative, you need to be able to respond to that, and you need to be able to let them know that you're going to support them through a difficult time.
So investing in their future, letting them know that their opinions matter, listening to their input, relying on it, being confident in that, and really caring about them as human beings. What else would you add if I said, okay, you can have two more? That was the top three.
Hire smart.
There you go.
Part of the reasons that my job is really easy is because I've been really fortunate to surround myself with some great people. And Carlsbad, as an employer, has been really attractive to attorneys. So when I've had positions open up, and even when I got there, it's just a really great department. My department, everyone is very loyal and very hardworking.
That's fantastic. Well, the city is a great place and runs so efficiently. So you're a big part of that.
Well, I love this city.
Well, there's a lot to love about Carlsbad. So who inspired you, Celia, as a leader as you were coming up the ranks?
A person?
Mm-hmm.
Can I have a group of people?
Sure.
When I was just a law clerk, I was fortunate to be able to attend a city attorney seminar, and it was on a new law that had come down from the legislature. It wasn't written clearly. Still, I read it in 15 minutes, and I went to attend this seminar, and it was a half day. And I came into this room, and there's a couple hundred city attorneys arguing passionately about these changes to the law, and their entire goal was to try to give meaning to the legislature's words and also to provide consistency for their clients and to make sure that we were delivering the very best service for the public. And I was just a law clerk, but I remember thinking, oh my God, if I could be one of these people someday, I would be so honored and so grateful. So that feeling of gratitude mm-hmm. really inspired me to enter the profession and has caused me to be humble the whole time. I mean, it's an amazing group of people. And I had a similar experience. This is a personal experience. And that is, my son had a catastrophic injury. He was paralyzed in an accident. And I don't know how I could have gotten through that time, except that my community came together. They held fundraisers, they supported me, and it made me feel so grateful that I now am very involved in volunteer work, and I support a lot of different organizations because of my gratitude. It's really inspired me to try to give back to the maximum of my abilities. I don't want to say in return for the people who came out for me. Mm-hmm. But what I saw in that time in my life, which was otherwise a very dark time, and I want to mention, by the way, my son's doing swell right now. He's a college senior at USC.
That's awesome.
But at that dark time, those people showed me something about humanity that I would never have seen otherwise, right? I had mm-hmm. people who gave me their last $50. I
mean, wow.
It was pretty impressive and very humbling to think that strangers would come and give to my son's cause. So that really changed me and how I felt about volunteer work. Before that, I had been on the board of a charter school down in the barrio. But since then, I've become much more active with a couple, three different charities, mostly related to spinal cord injury, paralysis, injured athletes, young people.
So taking, as you said, a very dark time and doing something good with it to help really, it's a healing thing too, I think.
It is.
Approach that.
And so both of those situations really had to do with me feeling really grateful about being somewhere and then wanting to give back more.
Mm-hmm.
So I think recognizing the benefits that come onto us sometimes, it's so easy to get into a mindset of kvetching about something and mm-hmm. complaining about what went wrong that day. But believe it or not, it's equally as easy to get into a mindset of counting your blessings every day. And it sounds kind of corny, but it really does give you a different perspective on the world.
It does. And first of all, we're so happy to hear your son's doing well. Not a surprise by any means. He's got a great leader as a mom. But I think, so often we're going into the world with what's wrong with the world. You know, could we start thinking about what's right? And that's that mindset change that we talk about, and you have that control. Each person does, really.
I think it's important to recognize we have that control, and also to remember that everyone that we encounter, we probably have more in common with them than we have differences. And right now, in this weird world we're living in, where there's a lot of divide and conquer, there's a lot of binary solutions that are presented. You're either black or you're white, you're for mm-hmm. me or you're against me. I try not to fall into any of that. I try to find something, a strong bond in common with everybody that I meet. So in this age where they tell you not to talk politics, I try to talk to everybody about the state of the world and what they think we can do to make it better.
That's great. And how do you do that, by the way?
Well, I try to find common ground. Ethics is a common ground. Most of us want honest people to serve our government, and there's laws that aid that, and I think it's important that we make those relevant to people, and so they know why they exist. So, for instance, at the local government level and at the state level, we want to make sure that our elected officials are making decisions in the best interests of the public, not in their own best interest. And so we have a system that requires them to disclose their financial interests. And when they have a financial interest, for instance, in a piece of property that might benefit from a decision, they're not allowed to participate in that decision. Why is that? It's because we want to make sure that they're making decisions for us and not for them. And so the law says, step down. We don't want the public to even have a question about your integrity. And we want the public to be assured that government is serving everybody, regardless of your status or your wealth or your connections, serving everybody equally. So I'm a believer in those laws, and I find that those foundational laws, most people believe in them. It doesn't matter what party you are. So that always serves as a good basis for the beginning of a conversation.
And I think also what you have done today for our listeners and the other night when you talked to our students is just shed some nice positive light on the law profession, that how valuable it is to all of us. And there's just so much, again, joking and negativity around your profession, right? You hear that all the time.
Yep, there's break marks in front of the snake. I've heard that one. there is, but for me, law has been a very rewarding profession. I wouldn't have it any other way. I feel like I've been able to do a lot of good for the public. I feel like I've learned so much. I've served with exemplary people who inspire me every day. I think it's been a very fulfilling career, and I would recommend it. And there's so many other opportunities in cities. You don't have to go to law school and be the lawyer. We have people who are working on solutions for some of our complex infrastructure problems, and that's just as rewarding and doesn't require a law degree. So cities do really cool things.
I love it.
Cities do great stuff, and we're really the infrastructure upon which successful business is created also. When cities are successful, we have a good balance of housing, a good balance of jobs, a good balance of people. And if we're successful at doing all that, then you want to come here and you want to live and you want to work. So it's kind of like that SimCity game where you're moving things around, trying to get the balance right.
Exactly.
And you have to change it, right? There's new conditions that come down all the time.
Right.
New laws come down from Sacramento. We have to adjust. New technologies come up and we have to adjust. So
it's very dynamic.
Super interesting. Yes. Very dynamic.
Yeah. Never a dull moment, I'm sure.
Oh, no. Not in my job.
Well, in closing thoughts from you on leadership, what would you like to share with our audience?
Well, I think that for young people, what they need to remember about leadership is leadership looks great when everything is going well, right? It's so easy to be a leader when your business is thriving, when the economy is thriving. But what's more important to realize is what people do when the chips are down, because that's when you really get to define yourself, is through adversity. When things are stacked against you, do you still have the ability to demonstrate integrity and compassion and responsibility? And I think it's important to know that a leader is a leader in the dark and in the light.
Mm-hmm.
And you really have to have the resilience to carry yourself through those dark times and the belief in yourself and in your vision to be able to get to the light. But it doesn't just happen. It's so easy for young people, I think, to just see the final product and forget that those people, that's why I love stories of how people became actors and leaders and CEOs, because a lot of those stories are marked by failure. And what makes the people remarkable is that they keep picking themselves up again. That resilience is probably the single greatest characteristic of a leader, the ability to just keep getting back up and doing it again. So I think it's important for people to know that and to practice that. You really get to define yourself when times are hard, not just when times are easy.
Yeah, that's actually more important than anything.
It is kind of. I told someone that the only real talent I've had my whole life is just the ability to get back up and do it again the next day.
I think you and I have that in common. I would wholeheartedly agree with you on that. And it's definitely makes it all worthwhile when you see, wow, I carried on through that. I kept going. And that, you know, really speaks volume to who you are and builds confidence and all the things you've been talking about.
Well, I think so. And I think there's a lot of gifts to be gained from perseverance. Sometimes we don't really know what the answer is, but if we keep going, it'll present itself eventually. And no matter what, things do change. So what looks insurmountable this week in a year probably will look very different.
That's one thing we can count on, right? Things will change.
Yep.
And I like what else you said. It's hard to be human. I just love that. Thank you for that. And thank you for all of your wisdom and experience and sharing some of your story with us today. It's just been delightful, and we enjoyed talking with you so much.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you so much for having me. I was quite flattered to be asked.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Okay, well, have a great rest of the day, everyone, and thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. As 2017 comes to a close, we wanted to inform you of some exciting things happening at SLI going into the new year. Our 2018 conference is set to be one of the most exciting to date. Our speaker roster is packed with exciting servant leadership practitioners like Mark Miller from Chick-fil-A, world-renowned leadership author Ken Blanchard, leadership expert Dove Barron, Vicky Floyd Clark, noted trainer and consultant, Joe Nekwanabe, CEO of Milax Corporate Ventures, and SLI founder and CEO Art Barter. Early bird rates for registration will be closing December 31st of 2017, so be sure to take advantage of those savings. Log on to our website at servantleadershipinstitute.com to see how to register and explore our site to find engaging blogs, articles, and books written by founder and CEO Art Barter, all created to inspire and equip you on your servant leadership journey. From all of us at the Servant Leadership Institute, we wish you a wonderful holiday season and a happy new year. Thank you once again for allowing us to add value to your day.